Just 9 game weeks remains. How do we prepare for the blank and doubles? Is now time to invest in Villa? Why everyone's going for Grealish? And Sam has activated her wild card. Well, 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 it is over. The biggest double game week of the season so far. We survived it. Some of us thrived it. The FPL pod is back with you to react to all of the drama. This week's top scorer on the panel. Yes, guys, it's me. I think that's the first time I've ever said that, especially this season. My disastrous season had a slightly better week. Still not as good as some of the bench boosters that I saw out there. I'm also, as always, joined by Sam Bonfield and Julian Laron. Now, Jules, it was a huge double, wasn't it? None of us played any chips, but plenty did. Over 1.5 million managers. How did it go for you? Did you get through unscathed without playing one?
Yeah, I got 98 points, which is good. It's not very good because I think there's a lot of people who got really, really high scores, and rightly so, because it was a big double game week. As we said, if you had a good bench and you bench boosted, then well done to you. If you picked the right captain as well, well done to you. I mean, there was a lot of us that went for Marcus Rashford, which in the end came good. But for a long time, it looked like maybe that was not the right choice to make. But yeah, in the end, I would expect a lot of our listeners to have had really good weeks, like pretty much all of us. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit bold of me to go big early on with my score, given no, that I got 105. I got 105, but I saw people getting like 130,
yeah,
140.
Yeah, I think they were high scores.
I was very envious. Yeah, Sam, well, you were a bit worried about your rank not playing a chip. How did it go?
Let's just say I think I survived it just about. It was a shocker. But I knew that it was going to be a shocker. And Kelly, made way worse by what was going on in the rest of my house, because of course, my hubby and my little one absolutely smashed it again this week. They'd both played their bench boost. So I got 87, which saw me drop about 100K in rank. So that really hurt. But wild card, all of that still to go. So hopefully we can get that back. But when I look at Max and Lee, so you got the wrong part of FPL family on this week for sure, because Lee got 141
wow.
this week.
Whoa.
Yeah. And Max got 128. So I'm just like, you guys have put me to absolute shame this week. But we've survived it. We're heading into 30. I'm feeling positive about that one.
Gosh, I'm quite embarrassed that I got excited about 105 now I've heard those scores.
Try living with them though, Kelly.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Lee hasn't mentioned it at all today, has he? No,
not once.
Very humble, I'm sure. Well, it's time to welcome our final guest this week. I'm intrigued to see just how good his game week was. And I'm going to be honest, this guest, we've already mentioned Samsung Max once. I think he's pretty excited that we've got him on. It's athletic journalist and author of the books, You Are a Champion and You Can Do It, with Marcus Rashford. It is Carl Anker. Carl, good to have you on. Tell us, did you survive the game week?
105 points.
Oh, snap. Snap.
Just like you.
Yeah, well done. Although, as I've just said, it's probably not as good as we both thought it was, given some of the other scores.
I did leave a 6-point Jose Sarr on the bench, as well as a 9-point Andreas Pereira. So I probably could have gone higher if I'd gone for a bench boost. But I tend to save my bench boost for the final weekend of the season.
Oh, do you? Interesting. See, I saved my bench boost. I don't really know what I was saving it for this week, because a bit like you, I had Gabriel Martinelli on my bench. I unfortunately went for Saka over Martinelli. That didn't pay off. Tell me how your season's gone so far. What chips have you got left still?
Bench boost is the only one I have left. I don't think I have a wild card left. This season, I'm on 1,700 points overall. It's fine, you know. it's been one of those seasons where, because there's been almost a hollowing out of the Premier League's mid-table, it's been quite hard to figure out, like, where's the cheap midfielder or the cheap defender you can use to bulk out your squad. And then by the time everyone figured out Brighton was good, I inevitably picked the wrong Brighton player. I was like, oh, well, this is annoying.
Which one did you go for?
I had Pascal Gross for like a little bit too long. And then I was one of those FPL managers that went, what do you mean he's dropped Sanchez? Gasp, gasp.
Yeah.
But yeah, getting there.
How long have you been playing the game? And is it, so I know there's quite a community of you at The Athletic. There's lots of you that kind of work together in quite a close team. You're the Manchester United correspondent, of course. Are there a few of you that play?
Oh yeah, we've got like our own league and whatnot. Going by this current email, I've been doing FPL since the 2014-15 season.
Okay.
Nice.
And I know on like a previous email that during the Hotmail days, I was also buying FPL in like 2008, 2009, where I didn't quite grasp how FPL worked. So if a player was injured for 3 months, I didn't sell him. I just kept him in there waiting for him to get fit.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
So you're a long time player is what I take away from that. Okay, let's reflect on game week 29. Sam, give us a bit of a review of the main headlines, because of course we had the off the bench earlier in the week, but of course we've had action since then. What are the main takeaways do you think that we should take from this huge double?
Oh, it's been a massive one, hasn't it? And a big learning point, I think, for a lot of us as FPL managers. And obviously, you know, Carl mentioned Brighton. They, once again, that Brighton-Brentford game at the weekend was one of the best games of football I have ever seen. Like, it was end-to-end, it was attacking stuff. Brighton, once again, highlighting how important they are for us as FPL assets this season, yet still somehow not very highly owned. I think because people don't really know which of the Brighton assets to kind of invest in. And then, you know, we've all been talking, and we spoke a lot last week about Liverpool, and then that Chelsea Liverpool game on Tuesday evening, well, it was pretty much the reverse of the Brighton Brentford game at the weekend. And I found myself watching it kind of going, well, I've spent all this time thinking about investing in these two clubs and, you know, double game weeks, etc., etc., but now I'm thinking, how interested am I in this, particularly with the uncertainty around, you know, new managers at Leicester and Spurs and Chelsea and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's definitely been an interesting week. And I think, you know, the kind of key things that we learned is you stay invested in Brighton. You think very carefully about what to do about your Liverpool assets if you've got them, particularly with Salah getting benched on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that was a big shock, wasn't it? My other half. Do you remember us talking about Max previously on this podcast, My Max? He's kind of been loitering around the 4K mark. I'm not actually sure what he is now. I think he's still around there. And he captained Mo Salah. So when I saw him go 1-0 up against City, yeah, I was like, how has he done this again? But he does always perform against the big teams, yeah, and it did come around to bite him, of course, against Chelsea. Okay, some of the other headlines from the game week. Arsenal, Jules, Bukayo Saka benched. Yeah. We're not used to seeing that. And Jesus was excellent, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was in a game that you knew Arsenal would have a lot of the ball, but that Leeds would play quite defensively. And Gabriel Jesus, to be fair, unlocked the game. And I don't think he would have started had Bukayo Saka not been ill, because that's the reason why Saka was only on the bench and came on the hour. Otherwise, like we discussed on last week's show, I think that Gabriel Jesus would have been on the bench, and Trossard, Martinelli and Saka would have been the front three, really. And now that Gabriel Jesus played the way he did for an hour, I'm still not sure he's fully match fit. I think he's still regaining his match fitness, as in like to the 100% level. You have to wonder what's going to happen for the Liverpool game, because I think it would be unfair to drop Trossard, for example, to start Gabriel Jesus now that Saka is ready to go again. And Martinelli has been very good last 3 weeks. So it's a good headache to have for Arteta. It's not really a good one for us, because right now, nobody can really tell, apart from Mikel Arteta, who will be the three of the four from Arsenal starting.
He's got an advantage, hasn't he, Arteta? Because he can just have whoever he wants in his FPL team from Arsenal, and he knows he's going to start them.
We should make an Arteta chip to play. Yeah. So one weekend, you can have 12 players, and, like, you know, it's, yeah, he's lucky.
Imagine if that was a thing. Think how many Pep Guardiola chips we'd have had in the world. That would be the world's best chips. In fact, scrap all of the other chips. I would just take that, I think. To just be able to have the right Man City asset.
It's a one weekend where you can play four Man City players, and that's the Pep roulette.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Anyway, back to real life FPL, because that isn't going to be happening. Carl, I presume, in fact, that you watched Manchester United last night. There was a lot of us that had a lot riding on Manchester United assets. Firstly, what's up with Luke Shaw? Secondly, Marcus Rashford saved a lot of us, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He saved me, absolutely. listener, please understand, I am pointing to my head, doing the Rashford as I'm talking to you. In terms of Luke Shaw, it seems like it's a muscular injury. So,
okay.
Not good. I'm vaguely concerned about Mr. Shaw over there. It was a pretty good game. It was one that you grew in confidence as Bruno Fernandes got more and more time and space on the ball in central areas rather than being pressured from behind. And United eventually eked it out. But yeah, Rashford absolutely has been fantastic, and he's been a joy to watch. And I'm ashamed to admit, it took me more than 2 weeks for me to put him in my team.
What? But at least he was your captain. At least I'm sure he was your captain on the double game week. I'm sure.
awkward silence there. Jules has definitely checked his team. No Jules.
I may have gone for Ivan Toney instead.
Bold. I quite like that, though, because I feel like I was being a bit of a sheep. I nearly went for Mitoma and changed it back to Rashford at the last minute. And I mean, Rashford was all right, but Mitoma would have been even better. Carl, looking at Manchester United overall in terms of FPL assets, obviously they haven't been as good while Casemiro has been suspended, but a lot of FPL managers are heavily invested. How do you see their form going between now and the end of the season?
I think, like you mentioned, Casemiro's suspension has disrupted a lot of things. He's their best defensive midfielder, and he's really important, not just to keeping clean sheets and whatnot, but also for transitional attacks, right? Casemiro wins the ball, gives it to Bruno Fernandes then does the Hollywood pass, and that gets Rashford up and going. Now Luke Shaw is possibly injured as well. They lose a vital means of ball progression to get the ball from one penalty area to the other. But the good-ish thing about Manchester United is Erik ten Hag isn't really one for rotation. You really get a sense that he has his favourites. You know Lisandro Martinez is going to play as many games as possible. You know that David De Gea is always going to be the goalkeeper. You know Marcus Rashford is going to play as many times as possible. And up until the Brentford game, it seemed like Wout Weghorst was going to be there and trying his best, but not necessarily giving you the points yield you wanted. I think United will be good and finish in top four. And in terms of the chips you can always pick, Rashford, definitely. Bruno Fernandes, I think, are against any team in the bottom half is good value as well. And he seems to be on penalty duty as well, there as well. I've said that as well three times in a row. Sorry.
As well as Manchester United versus Brentford last night, we also had a big game at the London Stadium, Sam. West Ham won, Newcastle 5. Firstly, no Kieran Trippier clean sheet. That was my main angst from that game.
Well, so that annoyed me a bit. But what annoyed me somehow more was that Newcastle, who haven't exactly been scoring a lot of goals, scored 5 and Trippier wasn't involved in any of them. Like, honestly, I was like, you know, Trippier is, he's there. He's so important, isn't he? He's on set pieces. He's the one that's getting down the wings. He's doing all this great stuff. No points, Trippier. Come on, Kieran. Like, what's that about? But, you know, I think actually he's so well owned in FPL, and we're kind of at that point with him where you just accept that whatever he does doesn't really have much of a bearing on what happens with your game week, because everybody owns him. So the only real way to make that Newcastle defence work for you now is to have more than one of them. It's to have somebody like Pope, it's to have somebody like Botman. And of course that worked in the first fixture at the weekend when they kept the clean sheet, but not so great in the second game, unless you had Shah, who got an assist in that game. So, you know, you just have to kind of, with Newcastle, think about how that might play out. They still do have another fixture to be rescheduled, and that will have a bearing, of course, on our ownership. But suddenly, I think over the last couple of weeks, we've had what? Well, in this game at home, we've had 7 goals from them. So we maybe are starting to need to look at the attacking players again. But then it's tough, isn't it? Because we saw Isak got benched this time around, came on, was gifted a goal by Fabianski. But Callum Wilson was the one that got the nod. So it is tough with the Newcastle attackers to know where to go if you want to invest there.
Yeah, I was thinking that on my wild card, I was going to go for Isak. And then when I saw him not in the starting lineup last night, and then Callum Wilson scores 2, it makes it tricky, doesn't it, Jules? Because they've now got 2 very much in form strikers. And it's kind of hard to pinpoint someone else in that attack to pick in FPL.
Yeah, although Saint-Maximin is on great form, which I'm really happy for him, because I think the consistency with him and the end product was always maybe a bit of a worry. But now he's giving assist. He creates so many chances, certainly in the last 2 games. So if he continues like that, Saint-Maximin is potentially one that we could invest on. I think Bruno Guimaraes, who, and Joel Linton, to be fair to them too, one more with an assist and the other one maybe more with scoring, could also be interesting to have. It's a very strong midfield that we have in the game. We say that all the time. It would be hard to pick then who you leave on the bench. But if you're looking for someone, I think either of them too is interesting. But yeah, between Wilson and Isak, I'm not really sure. I mean, I don't think you'll have to take a risk for either, because we've got no guarantees that one is going to start at the weekend and not the other one the following game, for example.
Well, as well as a lot of Premier League matches this week, we've also seen 2 more managerial changes. Brendan Rodgers out at Leicester, Graham Potter out at Chelsea. And of course, last week, as we discussed, Antonio Conte also departed from Spurs. Firstly, Frank Lampard in at Chelsea. The big return, Jules. We didn't see this one coming, did we?
No, nobody did. On an interim basis to finish the season and see out the 9 games that they have left, of course. Yeah. I didn't see it coming. I don't think many people did. We saw him in the stands, of course, for the Liverpool game. But as a former Chelsea, as a Chelsea legend, you're allowed to go back to your old stadium and watch a game, a really good game. I don't think when we saw him there, nobody thought, oh yeah, he's there because he might take over just until the end of the season. But good luck to him. It's a tough job in a way, but not so much either because they have nothing to play for apart from pride.
Cool. Low blow there from the Arsenal.
True,
nothing.
It's true.
Nothing to play for.
I'm just saying.
Never mind the Champions League, Jules.
No, but I mean in the league for our game. I mean, but.
Carl, how do you think it could affect us in FPL? If we think back to the way Lampard had his Chelsea team playing in the past, can we start to get points from these Chelsea players under him?
Is it Mason Mount season again?
He's back from injury, isn't he?
Could it be? Is that Mason Mount's music in the background? Frank Lampard's 2019-20 season was pretty fruitful in terms of attacking points. I think if there was any weaknesses to that Chelsea side, it was they weren't the best at keeping clean sheets. I vaguely remember, there's been so much football in the last 3 or 4 years. I vaguely remember they were quite susceptible in set pieces, and that raised an eyebrow. And you can also feel the Kepa Mendy situation might be going to and fro, but yeah, if you're thinking this might be time to put in a couple more attacking assets that aren't called Hakim Ziyech, this might be the time to do it on the Frank Lampard.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, Sam? Because when we are looking at Chelsea, the Chelsea that we've been used to seeing, it's felt like defensive assets are maybe a little bit more reliable. And in particular, Ben Chilwell feels like the only real option at Chelsea at the moment. Could that be about to change?
Could be. I mean, I think what Carl just said is absolutely right about the goalkeeper situation. I think it throws all kinds of mud on what's going to happen with Kepa and Mendy. Like, I don't think you can easily call which of those goalkeepers is going to start. I think that's a similar situation at Leicester as well, actually, to be fair. So it puts you in a position where I think if you want to invest in Chelsea, it really does feel like Chilwell or nothing. But have a route to those Chelsea points, because potentially we get a situation, as we've seen time and time again at various football clubs across the Premier League, where they bounce. And it might just be that Lampard arriving at Chelsea makes them have a little bit of bounce. It might be that suddenly we get better performances from Havertz, from João Felix, from, dare I say it, Jules, maybe even Modric. So let's think about, you know, having a space in our team which isn't necessarily given over to a Chelsea player straight away, but that has the potential to be moved to a Chelsea player if we see that bounce.
Mm. Oh, and I'm always really cautious about this when they say, oh, new manager bounce for Chelsea. And I go, is it new manager bounce or is it just N'Golo Kante's fit again?
Yeah.
Basically same thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's the rising tide. And Kante did play.
So
in the thing that happened against Liverpool that I'm forced to describe as a game of football.
As for Leicester, though, they have parted company with Brendan Rodgers, as I said, and there was no, I was going to say new manager bounce. There isn't a manager in there for there to be a new manager bounce at the moment, Carl, but there was no kind of response from Leicester in their game following his sacking.
No, they're lacking oomph. And they appear to be going through what Mauricio Pochettino kept talking about at Spurs as the painful rebuild. So you've got a core group of players that were fantastic under Brendan Rodgers in that FA Cup team that have been aged out slightly and can't quite reach their peaks. And the new group perhaps arrived a fraction too late to kick on. I've got a draft FBL team and I'm always constantly to and throwing. Like, oh, maybe this is the week Vardy comes good. Maybe not. Maybe this is the week that Paxton Daka comes good. Maybe not. And they're much of a muchness in terms of asset picks at the moment, which is a little bit frustrating. I'm sure Leicester will come good soon, but I'm not putting any assets in just yet.
Yeah, someone that bought in James Maddison a couple of weeks ago, Sam, I've been left very disappointed. And he's been popular of late, hasn't he? Because he's kind of been one of the shining lights in an otherwise disappointing season for them.
But I think the part of the problem is with Maddison that he can't do all of this stuff by himself. You know, you have to have players around you that work alongside you. And fundamentally, Maddison is a great he's a great playmaker, right? He creates so many opportunities for those players in his team with him. But we've not seen any consistency across that front line. Is it Vardy? Is it Daka? Is it Iheanacho? Who's getting the start? That's always changing. He and Harvey Barnes, Maddison and Harvey Barnes, they feel like the most secure in that Leicester team. But even with a game against Bournemouth in game week 30, I'm still not convinced that Leicester will get the best out of themselves. Like, it doesn't feel like they know what to do next. It feels very much like until they appoint somebody to take over there, that there's going to be a bit of treading water. And the problem with where they are in the league is they can't afford to be treading water. And we need them to be kicking on because there's some such great value picks in that Leicester City team. None less than the goalkeepers and James Maddison. He's good value for money when performing well. But in FPL right now, I just don't think they're great. Ridiculously, I think I'm going to sell Maddison ahead of the Bournemouth game.
Wow. I like that bombshell. She's not even explained it. Nah, she's just gone, I'm selling him. That's all you're having.
That's it.
Explain.
That's it.
Is it just because until you see more from them?
I just think, you know, Jules mentioned earlier, those five midfield spots are so important in FPL right now. There are so many assets that are kind of out there going, I'd like to be picked, please. None less than Brighton. Of course, we'll talk later, I'm sure, about Man City and the fixtures that they have coming up. And then I look at James Maddison, who's sitting there in one of the prime midfield slots, just not really achieving his full potential. And I look longingly at other players and think, I think I'd rather have you, even with that fixture.
Okay, well, let's move on from the managerial changes. I get the feeling that over the coming weeks, we might be having more conversations about Leicester if they do have a managerial bounce. I feel like we've talked about bounces and managerial bounces a lot in the past few minutes and maybe discovered they don't actually exist. Well, many of us were building for game week 29. Now it's gone. Let's look ahead to game week 30 and who we might be targeting and if they too will help us beyond them, because there are, of course, 38 game weeks in a season. And before the end of the season, we also have the double in 34. And don't forget, there is a blank in 32. Just a reminder, the blanking teams in 32 are Man City, Brighton, Manchester United and Chelsea. The six teams doubling in 34 are Brighton, Manchester United, Liverpool, Fulham, Man City and West Ham. So Sam, I'm really simplifying this. Are we just meant to be now loading up on the teams that play in 34? But what do we do about 32?
If you have a free hit chip, it's really simple. You just invest heavily in the teams that have got the double coming up in 34, because actually a lot of them have nice fixtures between now and 34. So you're in a place where, you know, you can go to Man City, play out the really good fixtures that they have between now and then have them ready for 34. If you don't have a free hit, like, for example, I was having this very conversation yesterday with Max, my young one, because he doesn't have his free hit chip left. So we get to a place where we're kind of like, right, well, what are we going to do? And I think the obvious solution is that you dead end your team. And by that, I mean that you start just either saving your transfers for now and then taking out the players you don't have a lot of money invested in. So if you went newly into, say, somebody like McAllister for game week 29, then you remove them ahead of 32, knowing, because he has got his wild card, that he can just wild card them all back in again for 33 and have them for that run towards the end of the season. So I think you just have to have two very different strategies. If your free hit exists, do whatever you want to, free hit in 32, get yourself out of that problem. If your free hit doesn't exist, you probably need to think carefully about who am I moving to the bench, where's most of my team value, and the rest of them, start selling them, but sell them carefully based on the fixtures that they have going in. So Brighton, for example, two toughish looking fixtures, although games that they can definitely score against. So maybe, you know, selling maybe one of the defenders might be okay, but you probably want to keep Matoma, McAllister and all of those guys for Spurs and Chelsea, because defensively, those two sides aren't exactly on the best form.
Okay, so it sounds all very simple if you still have your free hit chip. Carl, I saw his eyes kind of go, uh-oh, don't have my free hit chip left. Which teams do you think then, Jules, we should be targeting in the coming game weeks? If we take a look at the teams that have the best fixtures between now and 34, top of it is Liverpool. They also have a double as well.
Yeah, they do. The thing is, it's Liverpool this season. You just don't know what to expect, what kind of Liverpool side is going to turn up. I mean, Klopp said after the 0-0 at Chelsea, and like Carl said, it was not a really good game. He said, oh, they're baby steps. I think he must have said that four times this season. After the game, he said, yeah, baby step. We're in the right direction. And then the next few weeks are not good. So I don't know. I will stay away personally from Liverpool, even from a Robertson, who we saw benched, by the way, at Stamford Bridge, or from one of the four, five, six, those attacking players that they have. Because one, I'm not really sure who Klopp is going to start. And two, I'm just not sure who's going to return. And we said Salah has been scoring in big games, which is true. And I'm glad we highlighted him in last week's show because he came good in that City game, just individually. But overall, I still don't think they are good enough for us to invest heavily in them.
Yeah, I think that's probably a very fair point. Next up on the fixtures between 30 and 34, Carl, are Fulham. But we've probably changed how we look at those in the past couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, that Mitrovic sending off suspension has really coloured a lot of thoughts. I put in Andreas Pereira not too long ago, and he seems to be getting along fine. Having watched him a lot at Manchester United, he's been a revelation at Fulham of just really simplifying his game and playing as an old-school number 10. He does still have those moments where you go, ah, right, yeah, that's probably why Manchester United eventually sold you. But he's had a good season. I think he is going to carry a lot of extra creative burden now Mitrovic is gone. But if you are the sort of manager who's like, oh, this person takes a lot of corners, I might be able to get a couple of set piece assists here. I think Andreas might be the one. Robinson, aka Jedi, has been a half decent pick for a number of FPL managers as well this season. But if you must have a Fulham player, stick with Andreas. And if you must have a Fulham player without Mitrovic, good luck to you. I wish you all the best.
Sam, it's interesting when we're looking at the teams that do kind of top the fixture ticker at the moment, because I've said there are two teams that we probably aren't keen on investing in because of their current form, Liverpool, Fulham. Then it goes Palace, that did get the win at the weekend under Roy Hodgson. Then it goes West Ham, who we saw what happened to them last night against Newcastle. So I guess, as always, it's this whole thing of being aware of fixtures, but also more than anything, being aware of form when we're picking players at the moment.
Absolutely, Kelly, you're 100% right. I think, you know, Crystal Palace, maybe defensively, there might be someone there if you've got Iverson and Kepa and you're worried about, you know, whether they keep their spot under new managers. Maybe there's a spot for Gaeta because he's cheap and he could be a second goalkeeper and you could just use him when you need to. But the reality is, I think, you know, when you look at the top four on the fixture ticker run from 30 to 34, Liverpool may be excluded a little bit because if Luis Diaz finds himself fit and available again, then maybe we've got some options there. But Fulham, Crystal Palace, West Ham, really outside Andreas Pereira, I don't think there's anybody that you think is essential. It's when you look underneath them at Newcastle that I think maybe we have a team that we should be looking at a bit more heavily, because we've all got Trippier. The fixtures are nice. They will have another game. They have got a fixture that's still got to be rescheduled. And so I think Newcastle would be the top team on the fixture ticker in terms of the order that they sit, that I'd be looking to invest a little bit more heavily. And then underneath that, you've got this kind of difficult batch of teams again in Bournemouth, Leicester and Leeds. And it's kind of like, well, the reality is, where am I going with these teams? Like, there isn't anybody that really stands out. Maybe Madison at Leicester, but we've got to see an improvement from Leicester before Madison becomes a really good asset again. And then it's Brentford. Now, Brentford are the one, another one that I think could be interesting. But of course, Tony still not picked up that 10th yellow card, has he, that we were all so worried about before game week 29. Yeah. So still available, but there is going to be a two-match ban when he does pick it up. So you do feel like you're just walking on a little tightrope with him.
Carl, how are you enjoying that tightrope?
Very well for now.
You were brave, Carl, to captain him, when knowing he could have missed the second game.
Not only do I have Tony in my main, I also have him in draft, and it's just always...
Big fan, huh?
Constantly. Ivan, come on. I've really enjoyed, Sam, the way you keep talking about Madison. It's very much like an encouraging teacher and parents evening.
Come on, James, come on. It feels
like that. I
just
want to see more from him next time. If he applies himself a little bit more, I think with the right guidance, which is very often how I talk about all my FPL players, Eventually, when Tony gets his yellow card, I'll probably say words to the effect of, I trusted you and this is how you betrayed me.
Yeah, well, at least you didn't get it in the double when you'd captained him. So you kind of got almost quite lucky there. Not that I'm saying it wasn't a really smart move, but a tiny bit of luck.
Yeah, in regards to the Newcastle pick, I've gone for Sven Botman as my additional Newcastle defender. Botman has surprised me this season because I had more than one scouting report when I was writing athletic pieces. When I was like, oh, which centre-backs could Man United buy a couple of years ago? And I was like, oh, I'm going to watch some Botman games. And one of the big things that came out was him was he was meant to be slower than you'd want from a centre-back. And yeah, he's just right up on it in terms of Premier League play. So I'm like, oh, maybe I was watching these highlights in 0.75 pace because he's a lot nippier than I expected. So all credit to him. He's been a fantastic FPL asset and he's having a great season.
But if we are going to talk about specific teams, Sam teased it earlier. One of the teams we haven't mentioned so far is Manchester City. Alas, listener, I'm not going to tell you that we've now got this Pep Guardiola chip that we've all been fantasising about. But Sam, they're not particularly high on the fixture ticker. They're actually just below kind of halfway. So they don't jump out at us in that way, but they jump out at us in many other ways now, don't they?
But they sit halfway, and this is one of the things that we need to be careful about with the fixture ticker is they sit halfway because there's a blank, which pulls them right down, and because there's a fixture in there against Arsenal, which, by the way, I cannot wait for that game between Man City and Arsenal. That is going to be an absolute cracker. And
I can see how nervous Jules is.
I quite want to watch it with Jules. Like, can we all get together and watch it?
What makes me nervous is not the City game. Is that after City, they've got Chelsea and after that, they've got Newcastle. And I think those three in a row will define the season.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think with Man City, look at Southampton and Leicester up next. If you're Pep Guardiola, I mean, you're looking at those two games, aren't you, going, well, that's... You know, that should be an opportunity for us to extend the goal difference. It should be an opportunity for me to get my players on for 60 minutes, get them off, give them a bit of rest time. Like, I'm expecting Man City to go to Southampton at the weekend, put in a really strong performance for 60 minutes and then rest ahead of Champions League. That's what I'm expecting. I'm not expecting wholesale changes going into that Southampton game because I think, you know, they have to win. They're not winning the Premier League. They're chasing Arsenal. They have to get these games in. So I look at Man City on that fixture ticker and I think in 5 weeks, you've got five fixtures. So yes, there's a blank, but you still have the same amount of games across that period as everybody else. You still have another fixture to be rescheduled. So we are in a place with Man City where I do think if you've sold Haaland, you need to be keeping a close eye on what Pep has got to say about his fitness and availability for the weekend. But now, for me anyway, this is the moment where you start to look at who else you can invest in from Man City.
Come on then, Jules, who are the standout options, do you think, at the moment from Man City? And would you be looking to kind of treble up?
I mean, when I prepared for the show, I could not believe that Jack Grealish ownership was still 2.9%.
It's madness.
And really, if you didn't think about bringing him in your team before, surely now, and I know there's the blank game week, of course, but if you can, I mean, for me, Grealish is just a no-brainer right now because he's just he's playing the best football of his life, even better than when he was at Aston Villa. It's just, you could see the confidence, you could see the players around him just feeding him the ball all the time. And when he's playing like he is at the moment, I just think whether it's a game where they have a lot of space or they play against a very low block, he's going to get a lot of the ball and he's going to make things happen. So yeah, Haaland, for sure, whether he was on your bench, you benched him because of the risk of missing out on the Liverpool game, which he did eventually. But I think he will come back for Southampton. I would go for Grealish as well of all the other potentially City assets.
Is he worth the rotation risk, Carl?
Yeah, I think so. He is in such great form. And as Sam said, the way City take to games like Southampton is they have a very good 60 minutes and then they sort of rest in between games. So that there's always a 10-minute period where, similar to when Klopp's Liverpool were very, very good, they just sort of go into second gear and just circulate possession and not really play football and go at walking pace. So yeah, absolutely, I think Grealish is a good pick. John Stones was superb against Liverpool as well. And I know the inherent risk of playing defensive City assets in this game, but the way you played in midfield was quite nice. So if you want to go triple, I would go, you know, John Stones, anyone? He looks a little bit like Cillian Murphy.
Is he the most secure defender, do you think, at the moment, Carl, in terms of, because that's what we probably look at, isn't it? I remember earlier this season I invested in Nathan Aké, who I've still got because he was having such a brilliant season. And I was like, surely Pep won't drop him. He looks like he's playing every week. Of course, he got dropped straight after. But
there's no such thing as a secure Pep defender because Pep Guardiola views defence slightly differently to most managers. And when he's not talking about Julia Roberts, he's always talking about backyards and gardens because he's very much preoccupied with how much a defender is able to defend against space and managing certain spaces. So if he thinks a team will play a lot in transition, he will go, okay, well, Akanji's better at managing larger spaces than, say, Aké, so Akanji will come in today. So yeah, if you can think of the centre-backs as gardens, and the size of gardens, then it makes more sense. If it doesn't make sense to you, don't bother with the defenders. But if you can go, you know, John Stones, medium-sized garden. Akanji, slightly bigger garden. Ruben Diaz, largest garden. And then you go, all right, which team is like, you see everyone's raising their eyebrows. I'm not making sense, so I don't do it.
let's not forget that Champions League is back for City next week. So just bear that in mind when we pick our City assets, because on Tuesday they've got obviously Bayern Munich in town, and that might influence what Pep Guardiola does in the game against Southampton. Mm-hmm.
Also, let's just remove the whole garden issue altogether by picking Edison, because you know he's going to play. And then you get the clean sheet points when they come.
Very good point. Very, very good point.
I'm still waiting for Pep to put Edison on a penalty. He promised me.
At some point he will.
He's promised.
We need that this season, don't we? We've had the goalkeeper assist the other week from Jason Steele. Now we need the goalkeeper penalty. That would be absolutely brilliant. Let's move on from Man City and especially from gardens. Let's talk a little bit about chips. Wildcard is the most popular chip again this week in play. And Sam, is yours active?
Yes.
Woo-hoo! Oh, she's left that till late in the podcast. Come on then, talk us through the thinking.
I haven't told anyone this yet. I don't even think I've told Lee. But
every week for the last 10 weeks, you've said, oh, maybe my wild card this week. And finally it's there.
This week. This is the week, Jules. This is the week. This is the week where I looked at my team and I thought, there's 8 of you that I don't really want anymore. I'd like a little bit of a divorce from you guys.
Brutal.
So let's do it. Because I think when you get to a certain point where, well, I can set up my team nicely between now and the end of the season. I can really hone in on the double game week in 34, knowing I don't have to think about 32 because I've got my free hit. So I can take a few risks, bring in a few differentials, have a few players that are low ownership who can really help my rank get back up, because I've got to find 100k of rank gain this week to replace what happened in game week 29. Now, of course, the caveat here is that the wild card is for life. It's not just for game week 30, because I think you can get caught up in that, looking at the fixtures in 30 and thinking, I've got the perfect team for this, but then also thinking about the slightly more longer term and what does my team look like in 31? What does it look like in 33, 34? That's where I am at the moment. And that's the kind of the position that I'm just looking at and tinkering with my team.
Talk us through then the wild card as it stands. I know you've only just activated it, but who were the first players? Maybe you can even tell us the first players that you wanted out or the first players that you wanted in.
So there were all the first ones that were out. That's a bit savage, isn't it?
James Maddison.
Madison. Yeah, he went straight away. Both my goalkeepers, Kepa and Danny Ward, they both went because I was worried about new managers and what might happen there. And I think it's the moment for a premium set and forget goalkeeper because of the fixtures the way that they are. So I've gone with Edison in goal because I think that having Man City for the doubles that they have coming up and also the fixtures in and around that. Plus I wanted a City defender, but I was unsure about rotation, particularly as Jules says, with the Champions League. So Edison made a lot of sense. Backing him up with Everson, just because I'm never going to play anybody else. So it makes sense to go for the current cheapest playing goalkeeper in the game. Up until last night, Luke Shaw wasn't going, but obviously with his injury, I had to kind of deal with him. So Trippier stays, Chilwell comes in instead of Kepa. I've basically done a swap around with which goalkeepers and defenders I've got. And currently I've bought in Tyrone Mings because love what Aston Villa are doing. We've barely mentioned them. Love what they're doing. So he's come in at the back. And then keeping Saka, because I don't think that you should be going in without any Arsenal. And then alongside him, keeping Rashford. And then the double up of Brighton. So I've got McAllister anyway, who's still ridiculously owned by under 9% of the game, which is baffling to me. Topping him up with Matoma, who I really regretted not having for the double game week. So I think having the pair of them makes a lot of sense. And then Tony goes because of the 9-card issue that's still raging on, bringing in Watkins because 8 goals in 10 matches. It's game week 21. No player has scored more FPL points than Ollie Watkins. Like, what is going on at Aston Villa? Unai Emery, take my hat off to you. It's been such a turnaround in their season. And then on my bench at the moment, I've kept Gabriel, which is the one position that I'm still not sure about. He's really popular this week. Loads of people bringing in Gabriel, but I'm not sure. I think there are other defenders that maybe offer better just in terms of more fixtures and slightly less difficult ones, like no games against Man City, etc. And I've got Estupiñán in there too. So I've gone heavy on the clubs that blank in 32, knowing I don't have to think about 32. But there are a few positions in there that can still change. Like, my long-term plan is to still get Gabriel Jesus in there, probably in replacement for Ollie Watkins at some point towards the back end of the season, because surely Watkins can't sustain this right the way up to game week 38. Whereas I do feel like Gabriel Jesus, when fully fit and when can last more than 60 minutes, could really smash it between now and the end of the season and would be a nice differential to have him.
Yeah, nice wild card. I've actually got mine still. Maybe I'll just copy Sam's on that one. No, I won't. Not that it would matter to you even if I did, because I'm miles behind you.
I don't know, you caught up a lot this week.
Yeah, I've still got my bench boost as well, so potentially.
Use them close together.
But yeah, I've still got quite a lot of chips, so I do need to make a little strategy for these remaining few weeks. But I imagine, Jules, Sam's looking for a few differentials just to kind of spice up that wild card a little bit. Have you got any suggestions for her?
Yeah, I mean, she mentioned Tyrone Mings. I think Konsa, Aston Villa, who's owned by less than 1% of the managers in the game, is crazy, really. And his form has been great. Mings is a bit more owned, 6.6%, I think it was. And my other one would be Grealish, who Sam's, I think rightly so, is going to bring in as well. So, I mean, when you think about it, just when you look at those three players, 2.9% ownership for Grealish, 0.5% for Konsa, and 6.6% for Mings. They, if they return well for you in the next couple of weeks, for example, before the City blank week, it's there's some really good points there and differential points to have.
Carl, any names that you think Sam should be considering? Anyone that jumps out at you?
Yeah, I've got Konsa as well. Emery's climb up the table was massively impressive. And on a similar Aston Villa tip, Mr. Buendia is also having a lovely little season. Yeah, a lovely little resurgence as well. So if you want to go all in on Aston Villa as the hot young middleweight pretender, Buendia and Konsa would be my selection.
Yeah, I guess they're a team not to ignore, aren't they, Sam? Because of their lack of doubles, we wouldn't jump for them. But their form, as you've just said, is outrageous.
It's so impressive what Emery has done since he arrived at Aston Villa. So impressive, because it's the same players. It's not like they've gone out and bought, you know, loads of new players. He's got the same players playing in a slightly different way to how Gerrard had them playing before, but playing with such confidence and gusto. It, honestly, so impressive. And Villa were one of the teams that I was looking at thinking, yeah, all right, there's no double there. But the fixtures that they do have are nice. They've got nice fixtures between now and the end of the season. Suddenly they're in a place where they could get some European football. They could find themselves in a European slot, be that the Conference or the Europa League, which would be a phenomenal achievement given where they were 6 months ago. So they are a team that I think it's great to invest in, because not only are they offering this really good form, they've got good fixtures, but they're cheap. And so they are going to enable you to have more of those kind of premium assets. And that's part of the reason I like Grealish as well, because not only is Grealish a differential, but he's also really cheap for a City midfielder. You know, I'm not having to spend the KDB level of budget, which means I can afford to keep players like Haaland and Kane. I can afford to have a premium goalkeeper. I can afford to kind of play around with the way that the rest of my team looks. I'm going to have some horrible benching headaches between now and the end of the season. That's the only thing I don't like about wildcarding right now, is that there is such good value. Like, Gabriel could easily be Botman instead, and I'll suddenly find myself on a wildcard that's got 5 million in the bank, which again feels a bit insane. But yeah, I think Aston Villa, if you just want a team that's in good form with good fixtures and something to fight for, they are perfect.
Okay, well, let's end the podcast then on transfers and captains. We know Sam's wild card is, so there's plenty of transfers there. Who's your captain quickly?
In all likelihood, it's going to be Haaland, I think. As long as Pep says that he's available, then I'll captain Haaland this week. If not, Watkins or Jack Grealish are up for the armband.
Yeah, definitely nice options against Southampton. What about you, Jules? What are your transfer plans and your captaincy plans?
So transfer could be Grealish, although I need to prepare because I don't have a free hit or wildcard anymore. I need to prepare for the blank week, of course, because I've got loads of Brighton, Chelsea, United and City players. So I might have to make a transfer that doesn't involve the player from those four teams. So it could be Harrison, who I really fancied the other day and went for Madison instead. Mings, Konsa, those kind of guys. And then captain would be Haaland, unless Pep says something that kind of hints that he's not going to play or not going
to
start.
To be honest, if I do wildcard, it will mainly be because I don't have Erling Haaland. Got away with it last week. Get the feeling I won't get away with it 2 weeks in a row. Carl, what about you? What are you going to be doing with your team for the weekend?
I'll be bringing Konsa in via transfers. I've got Rico Henry in there as well. I'm sort of umming and ahhing about possibly transferring him out. Haaland will be returning to my starting 11 and being captain. I'm also thinking about Andreas Pereira, vice-captain against West Ham, as a sort of slightly esoteric differential swing. I'll report back if it was too clever and ended up looking a bit silly.
I'm going to be watching that one with interest. The very best of luck, Carl. Thank you so much for being with us this week. We've enjoyed all of your tips and, of course, your garden chat. I wonder if that'll actually make the edit. I wonder if the producer's going to listen back and go, this guy sounds bonkers. We'll save him and we'll cut it out. This is a note to Francis. Keep it in. Please keep it in. Anyway, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Thank you to Sam and to Jules as well. A reminder, your deadline is Saturday at 11 a.m. It's a normal game week, but all of the game weeks are big now. So enjoy it, and we'll be back next Thursday. Bye-bye.